Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And we continue now with the third and final week of our April series, Reefer Managed, where we cover all things weed through this Friday, April 19th, ahead of our three-hour national call-in this Saturday, 4:20, called Ask a Legal State, when we will do just that, connect New Yorkers and New Jerseyans, where we're considering legal weed, with people in Colorado and California and elsewhere, and ask people from those legal states about the highs and lows and best and worst ways to go on marijuana law, Saturday from noon to 3. Join me. But right now, let's consider this. In the legal state of California, an underground cannabis market has vastly undercut the state's legal cannabis industry. Why does the black market still exist when any adult can walk into a store and buy cannabis legally? And what can New York and New Jersey learn ahead of potential legalization from that? Joining me now to discuss how regulations are impacting pricing trends in legal cannabis and how the underground market is faring as more states move to legalize are Tom Adams, Managing Director and Principal Analyst at BDS Analytics, a company that specializes in data on the cannabis market, and Julia Barajas, reporter for the news organization on this topic called Cannabis Wire. Tom and Julia, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
You bet.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And listeners, do we have anyone listening who's been part of delivering cannabis, either here in New York or New Jersey or in a legal state? Do you know anyone who has done that or does currently? If you don't do it yourself, we want to hear from anyone who works in cannabis now to ask, any plans on joining the legal market when cannabis goes legal? Why or why not? And if you're still selling or know somebody who does in a legal state, why and what has changed about the risks or benefits of doing it in that context? You can tweet us or give us a call at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Julia, I see that around $2.5 billion of legal cannabis was sold in California last year, which is half a billion dollars less than the year before when the state only had medical marijuana. That's according to Green Edge, a sales tracking company. So from your reporting, are people deterred from recreational legal weed for some reason?
So one of the things that we know, for example, is that because a lot of the unlicensed shops, they're not paying taxes, they tend to offer a cheaper product. So when I talk to people about their choices, they often say, well, this place, it's cheaper. You know, and I think there's also, at least in my reporting, there's a kind of a misconception that because it's been legalized at the state level, that everywhere you go, it's pretty much legal. And a lot of these unlicensed shops also ask for ID. So people think, oh, it's legal. And they actually, what I'm trying to get at is that a lot of shoppers, they're just looking at the price. They're not even really, they're not thinking so much in terms of undercutting state revenue.
So the black market weed is still less expensive than dispensary weed.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Tom, what's your take on this stat from California, assuming it's accurate, that there was actually half a billion dollars less in legal cannabis sales in the first year of recreational legalization than when there was only medical in California?
Yeah, it's as accurate as a stat can be, which in the legal market is pretty accurate. That Green Edge is our service that tracks point-of-sale data from retailers. So,
that's our
estimate is that it declined from 3 billion to 2.5. Yeah, and part of it's simply a definitional issue in that California had a very loosely regulated medical-only market. By far the biggest in the country, $3 billion. And then on January 1st, it went to completely regulated and licensed, where you had to have a license. So the number of stores and delivery services selling cannabis legally went from 3,100 to less than 200 overnight. And that's really what accounted for that radical drop in the first months. And then it's built slowly since then. But it's absolutely true that the industry is laboring under an enormous tax and regulatory load that is causing prices to be much higher than they are in the illicit market. We calculated in a report published last year that there's a 77% load on the cost of a gram in a legal store versus what the illicit market can sell it for. So people are coming into stores very excited about edibles and concentrates and all the incredible products that legal cannabis is bringing to the market. But, of course, flower is still the preferred form of consumption, and they notice right away the prices are much higher than they are from their illicit dealers.
Interesting. And, Julia, you've reported on the unregulated market in California and how it has been emboldened under the cloak of statewide legalization. What does the unregulated market look like in California, and how is it different than in states where cannabis is illegal, like New York and New Jersey?
So what does it look like? So one of the things that I was mentioning is that I think it's interesting that even though it's unlicensed, when you walk into the store, you're still often asked for to provide identification to verify your age. There are other things. So in addition to the fact that the product is cheaper, we've noticed that there might be offerings of like freebies or something like that, right? And that's pretty common throughout the area. And then one thing that I'm looking into here, at least in Los Angeles, is where are these places located? And I'm also interested in finding out who owns them. And what we're finding is that a lot of, at least in Los Angeles County, a lot of these stores tend to be in areas that are not very affluent. Mm-hmm. So I think that's interesting too, because another thing that we reported on is where the state and local jurisdictions have been cracking down on these shops, and where the crackdowns have been taking place has been also largely in not very affluent areas.
Right. So so you've spoken in both your answers so far about unregulated storefronts. I think in New York and New Jersey and a lot of illegal states, there aren't storefronts where you can go in and buy marijuana. It's more like you know people who sell and you meet them somewhere or they come to your place. Has the number of storefronts in California actually grown? Has this become a thing, black market storefronts, only since legalization, or has that been going on for a while?
No, it's definitely been going on before before legalization. I think, you know, I don't want to provide inaccurate information, so I don't want to say if there are more or less after we legalized, but I definitely think that it, because there's this idea that there's statewide legalization, the average consumer doesn't know that, for instance, like there might be a block with one licensed shop and three unlicensed shops,
And
you know, and they're just like, oh.
Do they advertise themselves as cannabis stores, or are they the local bodega or the local laundromat or whatever, but everybody knows they also sell weed?
No, oftentimes it's very, they advertise themselves as like a cannabis retailer, like any other. And what we see here a lot are like little green crosses. Like that's the common sign that tells you, oh, that's like the cannabis store. But from the outside, it looks like, at least from my experience, that the average unlicensed shop doesn't look too different from the average licensed shop, at least the little ones, like not the big ones that are like from large like fancy corporations.
So interesting. And Tom Adams from BDS Analytics, it's not just California. I see that legal cannabis sales at dispensaries across Arizona, Colorado, Oregon, and Washington State, as well as California, reached a combined $520 million, but that was a 7% decrease from the month before, according to statistics from your company. So what's going on with all of that?
Well, I'm not quite sure about that exact comparison, what you're looking at there, but the decline in California is the interesting one and really the only one. Colorado is a legal market, is now 5 years old. It went legal in 2014, and it is finally maturing, and therefore we're not seeing the doubling and 50%, 60% kind of growth rates we saw for many years there. but it's not yet substantially declining. And the other legal states are continuing to grow robustly. Washington, California. Uh-huh.
So it sounds like I misinterpreted that stat, that it's not decreasing in the other legal states.
Yeah, no, it's really just California that's seen the surprising decline. Because, of course, the key factor when a state goes from medical use to full legalization is that you see about a 10x multiplication of the number of people that can come into the store. We're talking about, you know, in California, 100,000 plus or so medical patients. Well, you know, about 2% of the population actually got cards in California during the medical era. And then suddenly 25% of the population, adult population that uses cannabis can come into the store. So you just see an enormous flood of new customers who can legally come into stores. And the trick in California was that all of those 3,100 locations, and a big chunk of those were delivery services, but 1,000 plus were actual retail locations that had a big green cross on the front and were operating perfectly legally. Suddenly, less than 200 of those were licensed on January 1st, and not all the rest of them closed. Many of them just kept their doors open and kept going in hopes for getting licensed someday, and a lot of them are still there. And so there's really kind of what we return to is black market competition, i.e. the guy in We're the Millers, you know, with the backpack going door to door, and gray market competition, these stores that were completely legal in the medical era, but did not get licensed in the adult use era.
Listeners, if you're just joining us, we're in the third and final week of our April series, Reefer Managed, where we're looking at what's going on in the legal states for what we can learn in New York and New Jersey as legal recreational adult marijuana sales are being considered around here. Our guests today, as we talk about the persistence of the black market in legal states, are Tom Adams, Managing Director and Principal Analyst at BDS Analytics, a company that specializes in data on the cannabis market, and Julio Barajas, reporter for the news organization on this topic called Cannabis Wire. And we're inviting your phone calls. If you are involved in black market cannabis sales, either in legal states or illegal states, 212-433-WNYC. And Maurice in Tarrytown, you're on WNYC. Hi, Maurice.
Hi, Brian. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Glad you're on.
I see potential currently in black market distribution in New York, and I see potential friction once legalization comes, both from local law enforcement that's trying to make a statement, i.e. maybe what Nassau County and Suffolk County were thinking, as well as just people in the tri-state area not being open to learn from other states, which seems to be the case in a lot of businesses here. So I think that's going to keep the black market going strong, particularly at the high-end customers who will not necessarily be able to get the quality at what they did before. Just an a thought.
If it happens like that, Maurice, would you be any more afraid or any less afraid of the police than you are today?
Currently, I would say that local municipalities' rabid use of enforcement for revenue generation will probably increase to make some sort of statement out here in the suburbs. That's just my gut from the law enforcement professionals that I know and the state of a lot of small towns' economies, particularly, let's say, the Hudson River Valley, where a lot of people are moving to and the infrastructure is not suitable for it. So I think they'll use it as a short-term revenue possibility.
Very interesting. Maurice, thank you so much. Jay in the Hudson Valley, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Brian. I just wanted to share my story with you. I had worked for several years running on what was then an illegal pot farm in the so-called Emerald Triangle in Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, many of the people have just, the habit has been to grow like a certain amount, and they just continue to grow that amount every year or more. Most of the people that have extra marijuana will try to sell it to people from out of state or brokers that go to that area, hoping to score a couple of pounds, or they'll mail it to, for instance, you know, Brian Lehrer, care of WMIC, and if it does get interdicted in the mail, there's usually no repercussion. They just kind of write it off as a loss. It's really interesting. I was there about 6 months ago, and I don't want to say the name of the small town, of course, but, you know, every single person probably in this town of 300 has, not every single person, but many of them have a medical grow license, so they can grow up to an ounce a month for personal consumption legally. But most people grow, you know, many times that amount.
What's happening to people in that category under recreational legalization? Can they sell it into that system?
I am not personally aware of exactly how to go about that, but my acquaintances who have been growing for many years and who sell cannot get certified. Apparently, it's kind of an onerous process to go through the certification and, you know, actually be able to walk into a legal dispensary and present your crop and have it purchased. So, you know, the upshot of it's just easier to try to deal with the black market, and whatever that brings.
Right. And do the people who you know report anything like what the previous caller was speculating might happen to him as a black market distributor in New York, which is to say, under recreational legalization, that law enforcement is cracking down harder on people who are black market growers or distributors to make some kind of a point or to raise revenue? Is that happening to anyone you know?
I don't think it's happening in the area of Humboldt County, California, in the Emerald Triangle, simply because, I mean, if you were to park your car and walk down any street in a small town, there's marijuana everywhere. You can smell it. People are growing it openly. It would just be too hard to crack down. They would essentially end up arresting, you know, 200 people out of a town of 300.
And it sounds like there'd be such public opposition to that kind of thing in that area.
And then if you go 60 miles down the road to a more conservative community, there's people wouldn't grow it there. The climate's different. The people may be more conservative and not want, you know, people growing pot in their neighborhood. So
this is really interesting. And is your point that you're concerned about your people, your friends who you know who grow illegally in Northern California now that recreational legalization has passed, or you're just describing the fact that it looks like they're going to go on because there's still a demand in the black market? Is there a point that you're making about some change for them that you're worried about or something else?
There's really not a point. I just wanted to relate my story.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Brian.
Jay, thank you very much. Really interesting. And Julia, it sounds like you were trying to get in there on that. Since you've been looking at the California market in general, was there anything you wanted to add?
I think that's really interesting because we have noticed that I talked a lot about the crackdowns on retailers, but the state is definitely cracking down on cultivators as well, on unlicensed cultivators. But I think what we've noticed is that they tend to go after... law enforcement tends to go after, at least in my reporting, cultivators and retailers that attract a lot of attention. So we know, for example, that either at the state level or at the local level, average people are asked to call in if they have any complaints about smells or things like that, or suspicious activity. And so when we looked at where law enforcement went, it tended to be a lot of times where there were a lot of complaints from local people.
So what happens? Go ahead, Tom. Jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to kind of point out the fascinating relationship between that Emerald Triangle of California and New York and New Jersey. An environmental impact report that the state of California did upon launching the adult use program in 2016 estimated that California grows 13.5 million pounds of cannabis every year. Of that, about 600,000 pounds were going into the medical-only legal market of California at the time, and another 1.9 million pounds were being consumed illicitly in California. Well, that leaves 11 million pounds that was going elsewhere. And, of course, given its population, a lot of that to New York, New Jersey, and the whole Eastern Seaboard. So that's really the economy of the Emerald Triangle, is exporting California-grown cannabis to the rest of the country. And that remains kind of the economy of the Emerald Triangle at this point, because most of the legal weed is being grown by well-capitalized new entrants who are building massive indoor and greenhouse grow operations in places like Salinas and Santa Barbara and the desert outside of Palm Springs. And that's what's really kind of servicing the legal adult market in California, whereas the traditional market in the Emerald Triangle is doing what it's always done, seeking high profits and high prices by exporting it.
Why weren't they allowed in?
They were, but it was made entirely unattractive to them. It's quite onerous to get permitted, and you're immediately in competition then with these very well-capitalized professional cultivation operations.
And so, Julia, what happens to folks in these busts based on your reporting? Do they get arrested and charged? And with what if cannabis is otherwise legal?
Well, it is legal, but you still need a license to sell and to cultivate. So the charges would be that, right? Unlicensed selling, unlicensed cultivating. And then what we've seen, at least in a lot of my reporting has been to be on the retail side of it, is that the charges tend to be against the employees, not so much the owners of the unlicensed shops. So there's actually been a push, at least at the LA level, to I guess go after the owners of the places where the cannabis is being sold. And actually in Los Angeles there's been a couple of measures. So one of them is looking into shutting down utilities of places that are unlicensed shops. And then I believe it was yesterday that the city also made a move to not only shut down, like to cut electricity, cut water, but to then ask the owners to, you know, there's basically like a cost recovery in addition to shutting down the utilities and arresting your employees. Now we're going to make you pay for the expense of having to, like, yeah, of doing law enforcement.
Right. So that would be pretty onerous on them in financial terms, it sounds like. I had seen in one of your stories that after serving a search warrant last October at a place called One Stop Healers, authorities seized more than $2 million worth of cannabis and cannabis products, including almost 500 pounds of flower and 200 pounds of edibles. The shop's owner was arrested on misdemeanor charges along with six employees. And when I saw misdemeanor charges, I thought, oh, even for all that much illegal weed sales, they only got a slap on the wrist. Is that the wrong way to read that?
I don't think it's in. I think they're. I mean, comparing like a misdemeanor to a felony, I think that it's not a wrong way to read that. But I think that it depends on, you know, who's getting arrested. So if you're a person who, you know, has a mean that you can get a lawyer and that kind of thing, ultimately a misdemeanor might not be a big deal in your life.
Yeah.
But if you're someone who, you know, had trouble with the law before and, you know, you don't want things like that on your record. So having a misdemeanor charge could still be a serious thing.
One more call who I think is going to get the last word in this segment. Jill in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I want to say that I'm sticking with my weed dealer who's been with me for many years through thick and thin. I find this whole corporatization of weed disturbing. what about the people who have been selling us herbs so illegally for years? How are they going to profit? Much less the people who've been jailed or have records because of marijuana busts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't imagine going. Your guest was just saying that you can't compete. These smaller growers sometimes can't compete. But as long as my person's there, I'm going to go there.
Jill in Manhattan, even if legalization comes to New York, she's sticking with her dealer. And that will be the last word for today's edition of Reefer Managed, where we're covering all things weed through the end of this week, our April series. Today's focus has been the persistence of the illegal marijuana market, even in legal states, with Tom Adams, Managing Director and Principal Analyst at BDS Analytics, a company that specializes in data on the cannabis market, and Julia Barajas, reporter for the news organization Cannabis Wire. Thank you both so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
And again, a reminder that this Saturday from noon to 3, we will conclude this series with a 3-hour national call-in called Ask a Legal State, when we will do just that, connect New Yorkers and New Jerseyans where we're considering legal weed with people in Colorado. In fact, my co-host will be a Colorado public radio reporter, and California and elsewhere, and ask people from legal states about the highs and lows and best and worst ways to go on marijuana laws. That's Saturday from noon to 3 here on WNYC and all around the country on public radio stations.